Welcome to Guide to the Cosmos on webtalkradio.net with your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni, physicist, public speaker, and author of Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, and his new second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident? With Robert as our guide to the cosmos, we will explore the frontiers of science and participate in the exciting discoveries of physics, astronomy, and cosmology. Now, providing public access to science, here's your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni.
Thank you for joining us today, and welcome back. Today we're going to talk with Alicia Andro about her summer job on Jupiter. Alicia is 22 years old, and she's a sophomore at Santa Monica College, double majoring in science and arts. Isn't that a beautiful combination? So, Alicia, welcome to our show.
Hi, Dr. Piccioni. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, but you have to call me Robert.
Okay.
So, Alicia, what interests me is that a young person can really get a job doing real science in the summer between classes and actually have fun doing it. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, well, if you asked me about 3 years ago what I would be doing, my answer would actually be that I would hopefully be doing restoration art in museums or perhaps running a gallery. So for me to say to you about working in the sciences, it was pretty astounding how I came to that point in my life. I moved to California from Pennsylvania in 2007, and I had come out here to meet my father, get to know him better, and also to go to school at Santa Monica College, because I know that the curriculum there is very good, the teachers are very good, and it was the right price, too. So I went to school, and in the summer of 2008, actually, as my finals were taking place, for one of my general education classes, which happened to be planetary sciences or astronomy too, my professor, Dr. Michael Schwartz, asked me if he could recommend me for an internship working at JPL. And what JPL is most known for, at least in the recent day, is doing Mars rovers projects. Constructing the Mars rovers and literally sending them to the planet Mars.
Okay, so for people who perhaps don't know, JPL is short for the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, which is probably the United States' premier institution for space exploration, and it's operated by Caltech on behalf of NASA.
Correct. And the reason why he asked me to recommend me for the internship itself is because I had expressed interest in further pursuing astronomy as maybe a minor, because I had already taken another class with another JPL employee, actually, his name is Dr. Salama, and he was a dynamic scientist, and he studied at the University of Texas, and he was a very interesting teacher, as well as Dr. Michael Schwartz. And I felt like, this is the first time in science where I feel there's an element of creativity, and I really enjoy it. And it's not just math-oriented or dealing with things on a subatomic level, such as in chemistry when you're converting moles to molecules. And I really kind of got into it, and I was like, you know, I think I can definitely do something about this. I really would like to know more about it. And I always wanted to get a minor in the science of some variety. So I said, yeah, sure, go ahead. Recommend me for the internship. But I didn't, to be honest with you, I didn't actually think that I was going to get in, because my background is mostly in the arts. I'm a painter. I take pictures. I can do a lot on the computer with Photoshop and things of that nature, but I don't know anything about code. Before that, I had never even seen coding for any type of program, be it IDL or C++ or anything like that. And also, to be honest, my math, I'm not a very strong math person. So I said, yeah, sure, go ahead. But regardless of my limitations and what I knew, I still put my 100% effort into it, and I did a beautiful resume and showed my friends, family, and cats, make sure that they liked it, and wrote a paper and showed my professor, and my professor wrote a recommendation for me. And it was actually because of my background being not in the sciences that I was actually picked to do it, because there is an element of they wanted to merge a person from one field that was sort of opposing to another. The JPL seems to be kind of really into this revamping the notion that they want more multifaceted people, from what I've gathered in our like seminars that we've been that I went to. It was interesting because I didn't receive an email from them for a while after I had my telephone interview with my soon-to-be mentor, who her name is Dr. Padma Yanamandra Fisher. And about 2 weeks went by, and I decided to enroll in my classes regardless, and I couldn't get the class that I wanted to get. I couldn't get into it. It was full. And in order for you to actually get the class, it, regardless of if it says it's full online, you have to kind of crash it or show up and ask the professor to give you a certain code. And instead I said, okay, well, before I'm going to do that, before I email that professor, I'm going to go and check my email one last time. And that's when I got the email saying, can you please send your social security number, your name, your this, your that, so that we can process your information for your badge for when you start working at JPL.
Uh-huh.
That was how I found out that I was working there.
So how long did it take between the application and the email asking for your information so they could make a badge for you?
About 3 months, actually.
3 months, okay. Yeah. Well, that's not bad for a government organization.
No. Cut through right the red tape. So I was super excited, but I was also really scared because wow, I'm really going to go work, and I felt like I was kind of sort of going to pretend like I was a scientist in a way. But I thought, well, they must see something in me for some reason. So I just went through it with...
You thought you were going into the lion's den.
Yes.
The artist being eaten by the evil scientists in lab coats.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Even my first day there, I dress in relatively bright colors, and I could tell, I felt like I totally stood out. And also, the fact that I was, at the time, in the beginning of the program, I was the only female working, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, wow, I'm really out of my league here.
Mm-hmm.
I met my mentor. Actually, I was...
But you were brave enough to do it anyway.
Yes. We went, and she went over what she wanted me to do. And she actually gave me kind of a twofold project. And the twofold project, which I later then figured out why I had been chosen, was she wanted me to do research for outreach, for low-cost outreach for scientists, so that they can get their information across about science to the layman, the general public, besides what NASA necessarily reveals.
Yeah.
Also, she wanted me to do, well, actually, what it was she first gave me that project to do, and I spent about a month and a half to 2 months doing that. And to be honest with you, Dr. Petroni, or Robert, I found that the most feasible, low-income, or low-costing type of outreach that I think would be the most accessible to the general public is actually radio shows online. So you're kind of ahead of the game, I think.
We're at the leading edge here, huh?
Yes.
Okay, well, let me stop you for just a second and let the listeners know that we've posted some of your images on our website, and they may want to watch some of these images while they're listening to the audio track.
Okay.
So what they need to do is to keep open the window that's providing the audio track, open a second window, and go to my website, guidetothecosmos.com, click on the microphone icon to bring up the menu of radio shows, and then click on today's show, Elisa's Summer Job on Jupiter. And there are four images there. We're going to go talk about each one of them in sequence. But the first one, for some reason, is my favorite. It shows Elisa with one of her favorite books. Can you tell us about that book?
Well, actually, Robert, that book is the book that you wrote. And the reason why I liked it so much is because during my working at JPL and even after, my father had actually given it to me as a gift. I was able to use it and read it and actually apply a lot of what you wrote as far as understanding the nature of particle and wavelengths and data processing and knowing more about why certain phenomena takes place in the universe, to apply it and understand it tangibly towards my research.
Oh, that's very nice. You know, it's really gratifying to think that someone actually enjoys what you write. It's the thrill and the hope of all authors, I guess. You didn't find too much math in this science book, did you?
No, and to be honest with you, the math that you did post, I was actually quite able to understand. So, and I'm not in the upper level divisions of math yet. That's why I've been going to school for such a long time, because I'm actually taking all these math courses to catch up. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tried not to do any, you know, problem solving, and I just showed a few equations so that people who read the book would recognize what they were. I mean, if you go to Paris, you have to see the Eiffel Tower.
Exactly.
And if you talk about Einstein, you have to see E equals MC squared. But, mm-hmm. you know, you don't have to calculate anything with it. So, mm-hmm. yeah. Thank you for your generous comments about my book. Tell us more about JPL.
Okay. Well, about a month and a half or two into the research, I was kind of wrapping up most of what I was doing with the outreach program. So I asked my mentor, Padma, if she would actually give me something more science-oriented. I said, okay, I've done the creative. Now I really want to do something that I don't know how to do. I said, give me something where I'm going to struggle, where I'm going to learn, and I'm going to be like, wow, I never even thought I would do something like this before. And so she gave me this project to work on with a couple of my colleagues. One of them's name is Ivan Genov, another one's name is Alex, and another one's name is Hrant. And we were all working on monitoring storms on Jupiter. And the way that we were doing that was we were taking images from satellites that and observations that were taking place through various points of the year over a course of 2 years. I believe it was from 2006 to 2008. And we were looking at these images, and Alex would take on the spectroscopy.
Spectroscopy?
Yeah, the nature of the contrast, where you can adjust to the color view and figure out what chemical elements are present.
Mm-hmm.
He was monitoring that. And then Yvonne was doing data.
This is based on the fact that each element emits a different color of light.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And then Yvonne was actually, he was doing a project on Saturn, which I still don't even understand what he did. But he was also doing a lot of data processing, because when those images come back from the satellites, they aren't clear pictures. You have to actually adjust them, and they come through and they were working on a program that's known as DRM. And so he was doing data processing and figuring out how to actually make the pixels become a picture.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then I would take the picture itself, and I would graph the latitude and longitude of the storms over the course of time. And the reason why we were doing that was because we were following the activity of two particular storms.
So you were studying the weather pattern on Jupiter, and specifically how storms on Jupiter travel around the planet and sometimes merge.
Yes, yes. Back in the year 2000, there were three small storms that were going on underneath the Great Red Spot, which is the big red dot that everybody is very familiar with on Jupiter.
We have the big red spot imaged in a beautiful image in posted as image number 3, and the storms that you're talking about from 97 to 2000,
mm-hmm.
those are posted on image number 4 on the website.
Right. They actually merged together. and became a bigger storm, and actually changed color too. And so it's known, it has two nicknames. It's, well, the technical name of it is Oval BA, and excuse me, the nickname for it is Little Red Spot. So I was following the two, the nature of the two, and what I found was that the Great Red Spot moves at a much faster speed than the smaller storm, because they're actually at two different levels of Jupiter. And by levels, I mean that Jupiter has contrast of dark and light zones, and where they merge is where those storms actually happen. And so Jupiter was at one point of emergence, and Oval BA was at another. And because Oval BA is much smaller, it actually it was actually rotating around Jupiter at a much slower speed. But what was interesting was that the Great Red Spot was merging at, or was rotating at such a fast speed that it was passing Oval BA on a regular basis. So, well, basically what it is that GRS and Oval BA were actually echoing each other's motion, but in opposite directions. And this is an occurrence that takes place every 17 to 23 months. And so this happening, where, well, it occurring in every 17 to 23 months is when they're aligned in such a way where it can happen. I was recording and observing that behavior, so for tentative observation to take place to see if the same thing actually happened. And the reason, the essential reason why we do this kind of research is because, and I really actually didn't know so much about it before I went to JPL, is because weather happens on other planets besides Earth. There are storms on Neptune, there are dust storms on Mars, and there are those storms that take place on Jupiter. And so when you understand the nature of weather around you, not just on Earth, you actually understand your phenomena that takes place on your own planet.
You are listening to Guide to the Cosmos on WebTalkRadio.net. I am your host, Robert Piccioni, and we are talking today with Alicia Andrew about her summer job on Jupiter. We'll be right back after these messages.
Explore Dr. Piccioni's website, guidetothecosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts that are available to you, our radio audience. Robert's first book, Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, makes the exciting discoveries of modern physics, astronomy, and cosmology understandable for everyone. And it was just selected as the best science book of the year by National Best Books. As Robert says, you don't have to be a great musician to appreciate great music, and the same is true for science. If you can change money, you can understand Einstein. Robert's second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident?, describes how precisely tuned the universe is to support life, and shows how amazingly improbable that is. Go to Robert's website and send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future shows. That's guidetothecosmos.com.
We're back talking to Alicia Andrew about her summer job on Jupiter. So, Alicia, tell us some more about the purpose of your project.
So we were doing this more as like research that would be filed and that could be reviewed again. It wasn't like a specific project that was isolated for its own use. It was just, it was something that to better understand the planet itself. So I learned a lot about air pressure. I learned a lot about weather. I learned a lot about the nature of the planet Jupiter itself, because I never really was very much interested in Jupiter. My favorite planet is actually Neptune.
Why is your favorite planet Neptune?
My favorite planet is Neptune, and the reason why, to be honest with you, is back in fifth grade, my teacher assigned us all various astronomy topics to do reports on, and she gave Neptune to me, and I got so interested in it, and it was the first time I ever wrote a paper and got an A. So I always kind of had a favor towards that planet.
Well, that's a good reason for liking Neptune. So what's your view about Pluto? Are you unhappy about the fact that it's no longer a quote-unquote planet?
At the time that planet was demoted from planet to dwarf planet, I was pretty bummed out about it. And I wanted to start a Remember Pluto as a Planet Day, like as a regular holiday. but I understand now from further studies of exoplanets that it's just a large, it's quite possibly the largest of many of those exoplanets that are on the outer outskirts of our solar system itself. So, I mean, it's its own entity within the nature of all those other planets. So I think it kind of re-achieved some sort of notoriety in a way.
But so you've come to terms with your loss?
Yes.
Okay, good. Can I ask you a question that might not be entirely politically correct, but I think is important nonetheless?
Sure.
The question is, why don't more women go into science? And if you look at kids growing up in elementary schools, girls are just as excited about math and science as boys are.
Mm-hmm.
And often they're better at it because girls mature faster than boys do. Then you get to high school and maybe things change a little bit, but still, you know, I've lectured in lots of high school physics classes and you see a very large number of girls and they're obviously very good at this subject. And then you get to college and things change quite a bit, and by the time you get through graduate school, you see very few women in physics or mathematics or, you know, these disciplines of science that we consider the leading edge of science. So somewhere along the line, we lose the women, which is really a very bad thing because, after all, half the brain power in the country is female.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have any insight about why women choose not to go into science?
Well, in my circumstance, from what I can only speak upon my own experience, I was kind of born and bred and grew up with, my mother was a ballerina, and she was very much encouraging of me to be involved in the arts. And I actually have played violin since I was 3 years old and have been making art since I was maybe 4 or 5. So it's not that in my case, it wasn't necessarily that I was shied away from it in any way from anyone, but it was just that I had other things that I was more involved in. And I think what it is that perhaps maybe, I think it has more to do with how they're raised when they're children. And the reason why is because men, they get various toys like Legos or G.I. Joes or things that require some kind of logic involved, whereas women, they have more things that can require more imagination, which both are very important to the sciences.
So you're saying that our society in some way, maybe unconsciously, steers women toward creative endeavors and steers men toward more technical endeavors?
Correct.
I have a 2.5-year-old granddaughter, and every time she gets a new gift, she turns it over to see if there are any screws in the bottom and how she can take it apart.
I used to do the exact same thing.
So it seems to me that she's as interested in, you know, what I would consider technical, at least at that age, as any boy would be. Well, anyway, it's an interesting problem. We're not going to solve it today.
Definitely not.
But it would be a great thing for science if more women would consider it as a career. And here you are, a lady who, as you say, is devoted to all these artistic interests, and yet you went to the Cathedral of Science. I mean, you can't do much better than JPL when it comes to advanced technology and science. And you seem to have enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. I loved it. And the reason why so much more than even just the work itself that I was doing was it allowed me to give myself an opportunity to push myself and to put myself into a situation where I was not comfortable and I was kind of a fish out of water, and to see how far I can actually go with it and to see how well I can do in it.
Most people shy away from things that they're not comfortable with. You seem to have this urge to go after things that challenge you. That's quite unusual.
I think it has more to do with, I find it more exciting when I get to learn things.
Well, good for you.
Rather than to just know everything.
Good for you. So do you think you're going to continue your career as a weather lady for Jupiter?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't think I'm going to continue being a weather lady for Jupiter. The project, or the reason why I did the internship, was more about wanting to just gain experience and also learn more about what being a researcher actually involves, to see if that was the particular route in the sciences that I wanted to go into. I decided I don't necessarily want to be a researcher. I think I would like to be more in the field. To be honest with you, I would really like to work for the space program. So I've been considering on joining the Air Force following getting my bachelor's degree, so that hopefully I can gain more technical skills and be more involved in that, actually.
That sounds great. I'm sure you'll be very successful. Do you have any final words of wisdom for young people who aren't sure whether they'd be interested in science and whether they might like a summer job like the one you had?
My advice is don't just go on what you read in your books at school. Definitely try to get involved in doing an internship or working for someone. And what is really awesome about JPL, or scientists at large, I've noticed, is that they really want to impart their knowledge onto other people as long as you show a sense of interest. So all you have to do, it never hurts to ask questions, and it never hurts to seek out things. So I definitely encourage people to be proactive in regards to getting more experience in the field.
That's great. Alicia, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
I love it when young people find science exciting, particularly those whose primary interests go beyond science. Clearly, Alicia is an intelligent and sensible young person with an important message that I hope many other young people will hear and consider carefully. Meanwhile, thank you for tuning in, and remember, you are never too young or too old to wonder why.
Don't forget to explore Robert's website, guidetothecosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts on his books that are available to you, our radio audience. Send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future show topics. That's guidetothecosmos.com. Goodbye.